Welcome to Gospel Tangents. I'm your host, Rick Bennett. Please consider donating or purchasing a transcript by going to our website, gospeltangents.com/shop. You'll help support other documentaries and podcasts such as this. Let's talk about the Hoffman forgeries and bombings. There are some critics of the LDS Church who ask the question, why weren't church leaders able to discern, using the spirit of prophecy, that Hoffman was a fraud and a forger? Others note that it seems like church leaders bought anti-Mormon material, or material unflattering to the church's narrative, that they bought these items in order to hide them from the public and prevent discovery of them. Is that a fair characterization? I'll ask Kurt Bench these questions. Check out our conversation. One question I wanted to ask you, there are some critics of the church who, because, you know, especially as you read Rick Turley's book, you know, he dealt with President Hinckley, Boyd K. Packer, Homer Durham, and quite a few general authorities, and duped them just as well as he duped everyone else. And some people say, well, if these are really prophets, seers, and revelators, shouldn't they have been able to identify this
fraud? Shouldn't they have the spirit of discernment?
Exactly. Do you think that's a fair charge? How do you respond to that?
The way I respond is that we're all in good company, because we all got fooled. His family got fooled, his own wife and his parents, his friends, his neighbors, other family, experts that tested his materials. He fooled everyone, including general authorities. So I guess I'm prone to grant them, or give them a lot of slack, because they're human just like we are. As Dallin Oaks said later, you know, unless we're given a reason not to trust, we trust people. And nobody was imagining anything like what was really happening. And, you know, I approach people on the basis of trust, just like they did, until you're given reason to no longer trust that person. So I don't think that they even would know to try to go beyond their normal human powers to try to discern something like that. They would have had no reason to be suspicious. I don't know how that works, but I think they were duped just like every other human that knew Mark. So I tend to be a lot more sympathetic, because I felt just as stupid and taken and duped as anybody else, although I don't claim great powers of discernment. But I think that's a natural human reaction, is to believe someone that you have reason to trust. Mm-hmm. So I never did really understand why people would actually leave the church over that. I guess their expectations were much higher than mine. I don't expect human beings, even leaders, to have supernatural powers. You know, that I don't know that they are granted any greater ability to discern that kind of thing than anybody else is. Maybe they do, but I just don't. I don't hold them guilty of anything other than, you know, perhaps we were all a little too
trusting,
gullible. But in hindsight, we can see all that. But at the time, it just didn't seem like there was any cause to seriously question his honesty or integrity. And I feel for people who were very distraught over that aspect of, you know, they were victims as well, but they had different expectations than I did of leaders, and I think a lot of it was because they didn't know their history very well and had lived too much in a black and white world. I tend to live in a world of gray more, and so I I'm not as concerned, I guess, about things that don't seem to line up exactly. I think they merit investigation and serious study before you make serious decisions about the course of your life. Mm-hmm. You know, so I feel bad for people who decided that they should leave because they felt that they were lied to by, not by Mark, but by the church, by the leaders, and just didn't jibe with what they thought about their religion.
You mentioned that his wife, Kathy, or I don't know what his wife's name was.
Dory.
Dory.
Dora Lee is her real name.
She was duped as well.
Yes.
Do you maintain contact with her, number one?
Once in a while.
Talk about her reaction.
She said at a symposium one time, she was silent for a long time about all of this, kind of kept to the, she was a private person. The way she put it was that for a period of years, she was asleep. She really didn't know what was going on, didn't really try to know what was going on. She was just sort of in this state of sleep when it came to what her husband was doing. And had she not been in that state, she might not have lived. If she had been suspicious of what he was doing, you know, in that locked office, or, if she had been more inquisitive, then who knows what might have happened. But there's no doubt in my mind that she was totally in the dark about his activities, that he had duped her just like he had everybody else. You know, there's some that wonder how a spouse would simply not know those kinds of things, but he lived a double life, and he was able to keep his true nature from everybody. So I don't lay any blame at her door at all.
But you do still contact her?
Oh, once in a while, yeah. We had her come to a lunch. Maybe it's been almost a year ago. But every now and then we have contact and we'll talk
about it. I'm assuming she's divorced? Is that the same?
Yeah, they got divorced early on, mm-hmm. and she has not remarried.
Okay. And I know he has at least one child because I don't mention that she's
yes,
in the hospital.
Yes, he has... I want to say four, but I could be wrong. And one kind of touching story is that his son, Mike, when he came of age, wanted to go on a mission. And Matt Christensen, Steve's dad, had, I don't know if he did it publicly, but he embraced Bill Hoffman, Mark's dad, at one point, and said that he forgave Mark for what he had done. But even more, when Mark's son wanted to go on his mission, Mac completely outfitted him with clothing and some, I don't know what all, to help him get started on his mission. I thought that was pretty generous of someone who had lost his son to the father of...
Yeah, well, that's cool. I think Mac's a really good guy.
He is.
So, the one last question that I wanted to ask you, going back to the critics, we'll take the Joseph Smith III letter, Patriarchal Blessing, that, was forged. And I know Mark was trying to play off the RLDS Church and the LDS Church, and the LDS Church got it, and, I know that caused some bad feelings. But in several cases, I know that Mark went through the historical department to get things authenticated, but then sometimes he went around them and went straight to President Hinckley and Boyd K. Packer and some of the other general authorities. And I know that Brother Hinckley, Elder Hinckley, he took some of those and just put them in the vault, and so the historical department didn't even know about some of these documents. And so some of the critics will say, well... take the Joseph Smith III. I mean, that's a potentially very important document. How do you react to the fact that critics may say, well, he's hiding that away. He's He's hiding unflattering history to keep it away from the public. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, first, I hadn't heard Elder Packer had been involved, but...
Oh, that's in Rick Turley's book.
Okay, I guess I've forgotten
that. Yeah, there was a meeting with him.
But I don't think he had anything to do with acquiring documents.
No, well, I think Elder Hinckley was in the first presidency at the time, but I know that Packer was involved in these weekly or monthly meetings with Durham and a few other people. But it sounds like Hinckley was more of the...
Yeah, he was... Yeah, Mark apparently was able to have direct contact with President Hinckley on numerous occasions. And apparently he was the one who acquired at least some documents that kind of circumvented the normal acquisitions process. And they were of more sensitive nature. I don't have any inside knowledge or, you know, special information about that. I mean, it does come out in the books and so on. And that, you know, that bothered people, I think, when that came to light. From President Hinckley's perspective, you know, if I were in his shoes, I would understand better the motivation, I think. I mean, like I said, everything's 2020 now in our vision, but I can understand why that would be a difficult thing for people, because it does give the impression of trying to hide things and put things in the best light possible. So I can certainly understand that perspective. I don't have enough knowledge myself about how those things happen. Most what I know is what I've read as well. And so I think in an ideal world, things would be acquired, things would be made known. And I think today we have a much higher degree of transparency than we did then, and I think, you know, things would be handled differently today than they were then, but I think we've made a lot of progress in that regard, and look at what has come forward, and that's, you know, kind of in the light of day because of modern scholarship and a more open attitude toward making our history more accessible and better known. I mean, look at the Gospel Topics essays, for example, on the church website. I think there's a much higher degree of openness and a desire to not keep things in the shadows.
I hope you enjoyed our discussion with Kurt Bench. As you can see, Hoffman had a big impact on church history and Mormon history, even if the documents he provided were fraudulent. How big of a role did Hoffman play on the decision by the LDS Church to shut down the archives to research?
So, yeah, it did make them re-examine everything, and I think it did have that effect of kind of closing things up out of fear and out of suspicion of what could happen.
Click here to subscribe, click here for a transcript, and over here you'll see some other videos that we've done here on YouTube. We hope you'll use this as a valuable resource to learn more about Mormon history.